You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about Chapter 8 of the book 90 Day Soulmate. The chapter is called The Ghosts of Our Ancestors.
The ghosts.
Let's see what we talk about. So today's show, we're going to talk about the ghosts of our ancestors, what that is, decoding and reprogramming, and lastly, self honesty, which is very important.
Huh? Yeah, and that's a challenge.
It's a challenge. And I'll just give a hint. It's when you be calm and quiet, pause to reflect, and really analyze yourself, trying to remove the ego from protecting yourself for self-observation. Because so much we're so present in everything we do. We're always involved and engaged with our subconscious, pushing stuff to our ego, and our ego protecting our subconscious from all the stuff around us, that we really don't sit back and honestly reflect.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What we see in the mirror may not be what we like, so our ego says it is what it isn't. When my friends reveal their stories of strained relationships, I sometimes hear them talk about what I call the ghosts of our ancestors. This is the information downloaded to us from our DNA. It's what we share with our parents. It's fed to us through the stimulus that we grow up with, that we received in the womb, sent to us day by day in our families. Things that we've been programmed with that we may not actually realize, because we learned it at such a young age that it became natural. It became the natural environment, such as a fish in a fishbowl doesn't recognize the bowl.
Or the ocean, because you don't know the ocean, yeah?
Yeah. They don't know what they don't know, and therefore what they see is what they believe.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about your son growing up in a home with just you, thinking that's what families were. The mom and the child stayed together, and the father lived in a different house.
Yeah.
And that was normal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We see what we grow up in as normal, or at least we're programmed to accept it as that is what life is. These messages, which are either deliberate or accidental from our parental figures or guardians or environment, all echo in our minds for eternity. So these ghosts are back there in our subconscious, you know, maybe even so far down and deep ingrained from our DNA, they're in our unconscious.
And it's difficult for people to recognize they have this kind of the information there and acting, I guess, for normal reaction, but it's something so deep. If you not stop and analyze, you never found.
You don't figure out why you behave the way you behave.
Mm-hmm.
You don't understand your ghosts and how to not make them so scary to confront your ghosts. Or what we talk about is putting the light of day on your ghosts to go, it's not as scary as I thought. And now that you recognize it and can define it, you can address it.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about that today. Many of our ghosts are activated when we meet and begin developing a relationship where we find a link to something in our past, and then our new behavior boils up from it, right? Our emotions.
We activate the ghosts when the many components is in there, like the, when you are married or you have a child or you lose some people from your family. So these all components maybe activate some kind of the program that you have, and this is the way how you react.
So it's like a trigger.
Yeah.
You learn something when you're young that you don't know you learned, that is only revealed through a current stimulus, a linkage between this new relationship and something that just happened and something that you were programmed for that you don't know. So we have to look about how to face that. So we were programmed with these things early on. They're now emerging. What triggered? It was the energy that all of a sudden the energy and program were connected with the energy and program from the other person. So it's not just me by myself, but it's like Lizette and I, all of a sudden something happened and the combined...
The energies.
It's almost like a reaction, right?
That, yeah, that you need both. It's a chemical, yeah. You have some components, but maybe allowing is nothing. When you mix with other components, you have a reaction.
So it may not, like, it may be, you might be with a different person and that reaction never occurs.
Mm-hmm.
So why with this person does the reaction occur?
Because the program that some person and my program maybe create this event.
And it may be with the person that's most compatible with you that program actually is triggered because you're now reaching deep into your subconscious because you're now in maybe a very close love relationship. And in that chemistry of a love relationship, you are now accessing these emotions that are only triggered by that. That if you really don't care that much for somebody, maybe you never have these behaviors triggered.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very interesting that you can be able to act really well with somebody that you'll never deeply fall in love with.
Mm-hmm.
But when you find somebody that you are capable of falling deeply in love with, suddenly your behavior becomes bad.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we begin to believe that the other person has power over us, but in reality, it's our programs that have the power over us. Our programs interfaces with our partner's program and may be incompatible. Might not be that we're incompatible. It might be our programs are incompatible. This is not to say that we cannot change our programs. Much of what we try to do with people we work with, as well as in our own lives, is to figure out what are our programs,
mm-hmm.
how to decode those programs and behavior, and then how to reprogram how we behave.
And also how you can connect with people, because it's not just your partner, it's your family, it's your friends, your co-workers. So you need to see deep. Sometimes people, I have an interesting conversation in last week, and then they mention, the person is acting bad. But I say, maybe it's not acting bad, it's not have the knowledge.
Mm.
And then the reaction from the people not have knowledge, maybe is to be aggressive because don't know how to defend. So sometimes recognize what is your program and your how activate when you're acting in your work environment is helpful. Figure out how.
So the behavior may be the ego protecting the person from something, like feeling stupid. I don't want to feel stupid, so I act aggressive towards the person who's making me feel stupid.
Yeah.
Well, they're not making me feel stupid. It's the situation that we're in together.
Mm-hmm.
Now I feel not capable, so my reaction is, something I've learned in the past, is to tell them they're doing something wrong or that they don't know what they're talking about, even though I'm unsure of myself. We'll be back after this.
We reprogram when we do the program or the show.
So instead of talking about us, let's talk about Jenny.
Okay.
So Jenny, who grew up in a family as the youngest of three children, didn't like to argue. She told me that she kept getting into relationships with men who always seemed to want to start arguments with her about something. And we'll start there. That's and let's see where that is. That's in the first, almost the first page still of chapter 8. It turns out that she grew up in a family with parents that argued often, but were also extremely supportive of each other. They constantly told the children they were loved, and the children felt even more loved after the argument ended and the tense feelings dissipated. So that roller coaster of emotion brought out this feeling of love. Because the storm was over, they could realize the peace and the love so much more. Interesting.
You start to value the conflict because...
Right?
Yeah.
So her parents had a deep sense of where they stood on issues, and the whole family had strong personalities. Typically, the parents would sit down with the kids and discuss the dispute, the position each had, and then the resolution. Jenny grew up thinking this is how families communicated, but wanted no part of the arguments. So she didn't like the arguments growing up, but she thought this is how families were. She didn't want the arguments, but she appreciated understanding that's how she grew up mm-hmm. in the knowledge. So let's go to the third part of this, the problem. What's the problem? Mm-hmm. The problem, and we'll go to the next slide here for that, that although Jenny loved her parents and felt she grew up in a loving household, the arguments made her sick to her stomach. She associated love and openness, though, with arguments. She thought she wanted a man with a strong personality. Where were we there? So a strong personality, like her parents, but one who would not argue. So she wants a strong personality, someone who's sure of themselves, but they wouldn't argue. So time after time, Jenny would meet a man who would not argue, but she could not recreate the feeling of love that she felt and that her parents possessed. After only a short time in the relationship, she would no longer feel the initial spark and she'd end the relationship. Other times she would be attracted to a man with a strong personality that would take strong positions. She'd fall deeply in love with him, but after a number of months and a few arguments, she would feel, oh, I don't want to feel that way. I feel sick to my stomach. And she wouldn't want the pain of the relationship. So that's interesting. So mm-hmm. she wanted the feeling of love that was created in her family growing up that she could only achieve through the arguments, but she didn't want the arguments.
So she need decoding because she have connection between argument and love.
Right.
And the equation. So she need to understand the love is so something different. They have discussion.
That love is something different, and if she couldn't get to that feeling, or she thought that feeling was the emotional, after the storm, the emotion of peace, that was where the love came. Mm-hmm. She felt that's what she needed for love. And if she couldn't recreate the argument without having an argument, it was a catch 22, right?
Yeah.
I want to have that feeling that I only get after this without having this first. Mm-hmm. My gosh,
I have a many person that know just for in different way, like the jealousy, people jealous or aggressive feel this is love, and they find somebody they don't have this is a boring person.
Oh, they're boring. And speaking of that, so if she understood her program of attraction, she might have recognized the underlying linkage and noticed signs of conflict and tension immediately. So she wouldn't mistake discord as compatibility. So without tension and communication, Jenny thought there was no potential for a deep, loving relationship. However, once she understood her ghosts, she decided to look in other areas for compatibility. So she went into the self-analysis. She looked at herself and she realized that this was going on. Mm. And again, when somebody didn't have this little bit of combative or strong sense of themselves and argument, where she originally thought that she couldn't fall in love or be attracted to that person, she realized that what was the cause of her feeling that she was missing the love. And then she recognized that she would have to have a relationship with somebody considered boring, but when she looked for other areas of connection, instead of being it the argument, she looked at other areas of her life. You know, this list of 40 things of these are the areas that I feel compatible in. And if she could build on those compatibilities and what she loved about those other compatibilities, she could move away from the emotional roller coaster that ended up at love to the really tight compatibility with somebody that she could share emotionally with. Mm-hmm. And maybe just the vulnerability of having that really deep relationship, she could get to that point of peace and understanding and love that she would never get to in any other relationship. And maybe it would be as scary as an argument, but come from a different angle, and she would end up in a better relationship. Think so?
Yeah.
We can talk about Elizabeth when we come back on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Welcome back to
90 Days Soulmate with Jim.
And Lizette.
Uh-huh.
But we talked about talking about Elizabeth, so let's now talk about what we talked about talking about Elizabeth. Elizabeth told me that her husband had power over her and she could not control her own decisions. Elizabeth was born in a home with parents who strongly believe that marriage is until death do us part. So even if there's no compassion or love in the relationship, you must remain united. You know where this story is going, right? You remember Elizabeth. You will in a minute here. Elizabeth lives in a complete chaos with her husband, Joseph. Hatred, rejection, conflict, fighting were the norm for over 20 years. I asked her how she could continue to live with somebody whom she did not love. She replied with tears in her eyes. It's really sad, actually. Each time I try to detach, a force with power bigger than me prevents me from taking the leap. Something was forcing her, her subconscious, unconscious, was forcing her not to leave the relationship, not to do another path. When I told her to try to love him then, even though she can't, since she can't leave, you gotta love him the way he is. She said that she couldn't love him, she could only feel pity for him. And there's a penalty to quit, and we must stay together until death do us part. So we're just going to talk about that in what we know, which was that she came from a family of parents who stayed together no matter what.
Yeah.
And even though they had no love in their relationship, they stayed together and stayed together forever. So that's how she was programmed. And if I remember correctly on Elizabeth, is that she understood the program that was in her subconscious, but she made a decision that she wasn't going to change. That mm-hmm. she was just, this is how it was. You brought up something, tribal loyalty.
Yeah.
So she had so much loyalty to her family, her brothers and sisters, belief, tradition, parents.
Yeah. And this is more powerful than yourself.
She cared less about herself. She sacrificed herself, mm-hmm. throw herself on the sword to protect the family, to protect the tribe.
The tribe.
That she would stay in a loveless relationship, somebody she literally despised,
mm-hmm.
but to death do them part was her goal. And so recognizing these things is, at some point it is, do you want to recognize it? Do you want to make a change?
And this is when the people call the comfort zone. So yeah. Or you keep going, stay there. Or you move on.
We have so many ways of looking at this, right? We have the one which is understand mm-hmm. your patterns and programming, decide if you want to work on changing your patterns and programming, or decide do you want to change your relationship, or decide you're just going to ignore it and accept it, right? So
and also live in this kind of uncomfortable relationship because see the parents when they are old, they may be sleeping and separate, not talking a lot, but they stay together. So I need to follow this pattern, you know? So this is just like the friend.
Yeah.
So when I see that, also for I talk it for myself, I see some old couple, they hang off each other and have a 30, 45 year marriage, and I say, I want to be like that. At best upon in my family, maybe it's different. So parents stay together, but no most emotion around.
So you want emotion. Yeah, all right. We do emotion. Yeah. We got it. We'll continue on our emotion.
I drop in the message.
Ah. So let's see what, like Elizabeth, we have decisions to make ourselves. We can bring this up. Do we want to continue to live in a world obscured by layers of information that were absorbed during our upbringing? Do we want to continue to subconsciously react and respond according to our parents' programming? Or do we want a conscious rebirth into the person we want to become? When a couple builds a relationship, the subconscious seeks to obtain an environment similar to the one that existed after birth. Because from being out of the womb into the early environment of the household, this just seems like, what is it called? Homeostasis. Homeostasis? Homeostasis. Right? So nothing changes. It's no big change. And you want to have no difference in order to feel calm and feel like you fit and feel relaxed. But that environment can be whatever that environment is, and you feel most at home in that environment that's not different from that one that you grew up in.
Yeah.
For most people. We are each looking for certain characteristics of our parents because that is what makes us feel at home. It makes our soul feel at home. It's how we were brought up and trained and raised at the beginning. When we are not aware of that, we tend to see our partner and all of their virtues and errors through the lens of our childhood home. And if the subconscious home of our partner is extremely different, that's where our conflict begins.
Yeah.
So we want to, and this is something we have in the back of the book, it's not the back of the book, the back of chapter 8, we have something called the parents, well, actually it's called the father and mother questionnaire. I called it the parents questionnaire, but it talks about your mother and father, your guardians, wherever you grew up, whoever you grew up with, looking at their personalities, the good behavioral aspects, the bad, and understanding what they are, understanding what the values, the beliefs of your parents are.
Yeah.
And then you look at yours and you look at your partner's and you say, where do they match? There's somewhere in here where we'll talk about the linkage between your parents' ways they interact, right? Their behaviors and your partner's to see if your parents' behaviors are compatible with your partner's, right? So you're looking about this ancestral connection between your current partner
and the house and you grew up.
The house you grew up in. Let's continue on here. Decoding and reprogramming. Once we actually are able to understand our code, our programming, we can reprogram it. So we can decode and program. So to decode and decipher parentally established behavior. Identify points of commonality and differences for you and your partner in new relationships. So this continues on in the chapter with recommend making a list of the top 10 positive and negative characteristics of your father and the same for your mother. Going beyond what it says in the book, the idea is that if you have 10 positive attributes, if you're a guy and you have 10 positive attributes of your mom that you really think positively of, that if you are interested in a partner, you should see that the partner has some linkage to those positive characteristics. And if you're a woman and you're looking for a partner, you should see that your partner has a linkage to your own, right? Your partner should have a linkage to your parents as you have a linkage to their parents. So that way, you give them a familiarity. So we have like 100% compatibility.
No.
Not 100%, but
90. Because we have 90 days.
90 days.
Yes.
The compatibility ratio, or the, like, if it's a 9-to-1, that you have 9-to-1 characteristics that are very similar to, well, and again, you got to understand, does your partner relish their upbringing, their childhood? Do they embrace it as part of who they are, or have they been constantly trying to move away from it? Because we are giving generalities that work generally for most people. But there are exceptions to every rule. But understanding all this only gives you more information to make better judgments from, better decisions from, mm-hmm. and to better be able to communicate.
Yeah.
Whoops. Yeah, so when you have a potential partner, you should hand them the book and say, fill this book out.
Fill this. You just have to make us some question and you write in the dating.
So are you my 90-day soulmate?
How is your mama? How is your dad?
Well, a lot of these questions are things that might come up anyway in normal conversation. Maybe not on the first date, but as you're getting to know somebody. Hey, what was your family like growing up?
Yeah,
what were your parents like?
I joking with Alfredo to say when you start to date, maybe the first week, visit the family house immediately.
I'd like to meet your father and mother. What?
Well, yeah.
I want to ask for your hand in marriage.
Yeah, and then you reduce the wasting time. You're running away after that, or maybe you start to create a relationship.
Or maybe you hang out with the parents. And
yeah.
There's been times, and I tell you about this, is that I've had great relationships with the parents of my girlfriends.
Me too.
Even though
the girlfriend, the boyfriend. Sorry.
Even though the relationship with my girlfriend fell apart,
mm-hmm.
you know, my relationship with the parents was really good. You know, you go away. I'll stay with your parents.
So I have a family that I keep going busy, and also my ex-boyfriend mm-hmm. married a different person, but I am being the dinner in the family because I love this family.
And they make good food.
Yeah, definitely. This Italian family make a delicious pasta. Gosh. I love it. I miss it.
So going back to what we said before is that the ideal linkage is 50% of more compatibility with the good traits of your partner's parent that is representative of you, and for a 50% or more linkage of the good traits of your partner with your parent or guardian that represents the partner, your partner. And this needs to be addressed if it's not at 50%. So if you only have a linkage of like 10% of the good traits, you may have a very difficult time subconsciously connecting with that person and constantly thinking they're doing things that are not correct or incorrect. Have to work hard on the relationship. You want an easy relationship.
No, maybe medium well.
No, your relationship, we talk about hard work. Hard work in a relationship may be to achieve goals rather than to stay together. So like our relationship, the hard work we do is mostly in work we want to take a vacation or we want to build something or we're looking to get something done. We're working on a project.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the hard work is. There's less hard work that has to be done on the relationship aspect. At least I feel that.
Hard work is we have to finish the backyard.
Oh, the backyard. I go. Let's continue on with this. The guide for the exercise, again, is in the end of chapter 8. It's a pretty neat, nifty exercise to get done. The whole idea is to understand what behaviors your parents have that could trigger your behavior, which could, in turn, you could look at your partner's parents and guardians to see what would trigger your behaviors their behaviors from their parents. And the compatibility is you want to understand what does trigger things. And by having higher compatibility with positive aspects of the traits, you have less chances of triggering them to have a weird reaction to something you just did.
Also, the story that I told you about a friend, that she went to therapy because she had 15-year marriage.
Right.
And then she feel that they want a divorce because she feel this is, you know, can't handle this situation. And then the therapist started to ask about when your mama was divorced, and she take the number, she has a 15-year marriage. When your grandmama divorced, and she don't know because she started to investigate, and then discovery that her grandmother also divorced in the 50s, so it's some kind of unconscious cycle. And she say, also the psychologist say, why you be angry with some issue that is issue happened 10 years ago and it's every day, so why now? Why now you feel tired for the week? Now you're not flexible for this.
Right. So stuff that was happening in the house that's been happening 10 years ago, now suddenly bothers her.
Yeah.
And it's because she's been married for 15 years now.
Mm-hmm. And she discovered in the therapy. She don't know the farm, the mother, so, or the grandmother.
And we were discussing whether that is a learned behavior or, again, since behaviors can come from many different areas, maybe it is how the DNA is in that person that mm-hmm. at the age of the kids are about out of the house, it's now I want to be independent, and that's your DNA.
Mm-hmm.
It could be learned from your parents, but it could also be a result of the DNA that's been passed on too. So programming may be inherent. It may just mm-hmm. be DNA programs based upon us as being animals. It could be behavioral programming that we learned as children, or ancestral as well, where it's passed on, but it's like kind of unspoken. Like maybe it's something that happened with your grandparents or great grandparents.
It's a silent, like the invisible loyalty from the ancestry or from the tribal. You know, the tribal loyalty, but it's not conscious.
So this is all fascinating, and the more you discuss it with your partner, the more you'll understand each other and their behaviors to have a better relationship. When we come back, we're going to talk about Patricia. I think we're going to talk about Steve, and then we're going to finish up on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan, and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about ghosts of our ancestors, not the actual ghosts, but behavioral ghosts, personality ghosts, things that make us get triggered. And we're trying to shine the light of day on what that is so we can recognize it and do something about it, decode and reprogram our behavior. So Patricia, the case of Patricia, who was completely in love with her husband, Christian. They maintained a harmonious relationship until their first child was born. She felt the relationship was changing day by day as she was pregnant, and even more when the child was born. Christian was away much of the time when she was pregnant, and she came to think that not sleeping together was part of being pregnant. But when they had their son, Christian was no longer the same husband when the son was born. She was confused and hurt when she came to us and told us what was happening. So what actually happened there? They filled out the parent questionnaire. We found out that Christian's father left his mother when Christian was born. And as a result, Christian kept hatred and bitterness within himself about the father leaving when he was a baby. His mother had told him a story of abandonment and cruelty. She said she did not know more of his real father, and the truth was closely guarded secret by the family. Now, imagine having that feeling, and now your wife gives birth and has a child, and now you're conflicted, right?
Is when I say the component, the environment create the situation, and the person immediately change. I don't know, because have this feeling.
So up to that point in time, the relationship, nothing's triggered because there's no the baby chemical. The baby key, the catalyst of having the baby is what actually drove the behavior and drove him away from the relationship. Let's continue on with that. So is there hope for them? When Christian completed the parents' exercise, he decided to confront the truth about the hatred and resentment he had for his natural father and the gratitude he possessed for his adopted father, because he did have a father who came to later. And he was very happy about the new father, but he had resented his biological father. He now understood what he learned was going on. What he learned, what it was to be a father from these two differences, this dichotomy of behavior, the stepfather who actually was loving to him and helped raise him, and the biological father who resented. And he then took on the personality of the adopted father, the father who cared for him. He rejoined the wife, Patricia, and they ended up having a much better relationship when he understood what was going on. So again, shining the light on the ghosts of our ancestors, understanding our programs and patterns of behavior that we had growing up, doing something about it. So there are many, many examples where programming from childhood has intruded into a new relationship. In one instance, a man had a domineering and jealous mother, and he would look at his partner expecting the same behavior. He would create situations that would create conflicts between the couple. His mother would also get involved in the drama, and he would feel right at home. In fact, he would feel loving towards this woman because there was a conflict going on. It's a real relationship.
Mm-hmm.
He also found that women who argued and were jealous created even more interest, like he was more in love, because they would call him like, where are you, you're cheating, you're doing this, you're doing that, and he would feel so much in love with this woman who was insecure. He would find that when he would date a secure woman, somebody who would like didn't want to play the games, that he would feel like, oh, this isn't love. There's none of this jealousy.
She love me.
Don't love me because she's sane.
Yes, she's so
not
proper.
Sane. Normal, or
But I always different. Say it's people prefer sometimes a crazy person because it's more emotion, like you say, like the roller coaster, whatever is expression. Yeah.
So I keep seeing this thing on the internet, like on Facebook or Instagram or wherever it is. It's like, I'm just going to read it this way. If a man is attractive, smart, intelligent, and successful, then why is he single? You ever see that? And it's like, what a silly question. First of all, it's typically written in poor English, which is probably the first reason why he's single. But it's like, well, what do you mean? Maybe he doesn't want a relationship. That's number one.
Yeah, I don't find this so maybe because they don't read our book.
That could be. Or maybe he's just a jerk, right?
Who knows?
Or has ghosts of his ancestors, and every time he gets into a relationship and starts to get close, he starts to become afraid he's going to lose the relationship.
It's the same phrase that people told me. So why you are single for a long time?
You're single? They say that now?
I am.
What are you saying? Now, Lizette, as those who have been following us, Lizette had been single for 13 years. Prior to us meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And
I waited for him, but he take a time.
She created the process in this book, and within 90 days we met, fell in love, got married, and now here we are 14 years later as
and
a sign.
And I keep going 25 years old. So
you know what? You've been with me longer than you were single now. Do you know that?
Oh, yes.
Wow.
I passed the cycle.
It is? You broke the cycle.
Yeah.
So we got to... We got to celebrate.
Yeah.
We're going to celebrate and have an anniversary party tonight. So again, this is in relationship to Steve. Highly intelligent man. He has a good son, two daughters, and three failed marriages. Sometimes impulsive, extremely tidy, and has social charisma that everyone likes. Hey, how you doing? How you doing? How you doing?
Steve.
Oh, I don't know. So I do know people like that who have had multiple marriages, have children, gets along with other people, but for some reason is single or can't stay in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? I would know. Well, self-honesty in the ego. Maybe that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it is failing to want to look at yourself, right? So in wanting to look at yourself, we talk about being self-honesty in the ego is taking some self-observation. You may look in the mirror and ask something similar. I'm decent looking, smart, in okay shape for my age, and have a great job. So why do my relationships fizzle? The problem is as soon as you ask yourself that question, your ego wants to put up this wall of protection. And of course, it always wants to protect your subconscious and unconscious and self from the environment. So it immediately answers, well, there's something wrong with them.
The universe is wrong.
The universe is
wrong. I am right.
It's society.
Yeah.
It's these...
Somebody cursed me.
All women are the same.
Yeah. Well, men is all the same.
They're all robots.
Yeah.
Not yet, but soon. We'll all become robots. So Mr. Ego quickly answers and needs no reflection. So when you quickly are answering these questions, it's hard to be honest with your answer.
Mm-hmm.
Part of self-honesty is genuine humility. So we talk about that the moment of self-honesty requires genuine humility, that we shed all the old programs, old praise, old insults, and be completely honest with ourselves. It takes looking at the stuff that we talk about in this book, self-analysis, from a objective observation.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at and go, how did I grow up? What were my parents like? Don't get into how you feel about it. Just the facts. You're putting down what created you. And to be objective in how do you react to certain things? Like, okay, my parents were this way. They had these behaviors. How do I feel about that? And being honest with yourself, you have to say, you know what? Maybe my behavior is bad. Maybe there's something wrong about me.
And recommend go therapy, because therapy always helps you in some way. So I don't feel scared to do something and learn more about yourself, because the ego is so powerful. Sometimes blocking you never see.
So I've gone to therapy a few times.
Okay.
And sometimes it was for relationship, and sometimes it was because of the result of a relationship. It's always helpful because it forces you to talk about something that maybe mm-hmm. you don't want to talk about. Or maybe you just need a catalyst to talk. And when a therapist has no vested interest, when you're going by yourself, when in couples counseling, it's a little different and it's a little bit more challenging for those of us who don't want to talk.
Mm-hmm.
But they do help provide the opportunity to get you to talk in a situation where you wouldn't normally. Self-analysis through therapy and allowing a therapist to ask questions can help guide you through something like this. They have their own questions, they have their own procedures, but finding someone who matches what you need is really helpful mm-hmm. in that analysis.
Yeah.
You agree?
Yeah, so maybe start to do the analysis of the book. If you feel there's no progress, you can do that, yeah.
So self-analysis is the time where we need to close the door to Mr. Ego, slam it shut. Begin a real dialogue with our inner self where we recognize our strengths and weaknesses honestly, right? So we want to be honest about that. So when Steve went through an honest reflection of himself, what he found was the fear of failure after so many failed relationships. He would... this is interesting. In the process of reflection, he also recognized this. His ego would jump up and say, how can you be afraid of something you've lived through so many more times?
Mm-hmm.
So he would just jump back into another relationship, being, oh, what? You've been through this so many times, just get into a relationship. Rather right. than figuring out the problem.
Yeah.
Right? So the ego is, hey, nothing wrong with you, just keep up and at it. You'll finally find somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens sometimes, instead of you finding somebody, somebody finds you, who's the right person.
If right? you are open to receive and accept the person too.
So the process of Steve's reflection and decoding his program was interesting because, unlike Elizabeth, who we talked about before, he made the decision to change his life. He had to overcome the pride and ego that often got in the way of progress and blocked the process of awareness. When our ego takes over and our consciousness asserts it is in the right, it knows we cannot be at fault. Our ego emphatically states that our partner is to blame, and is responsible for everything wrong that has happened. And it's only when we get rid of the ego and putting the blame elsewhere and we reflect on ourselves, we're not looking for us to be, oh, it's our fault. It's recognizing that our behaviors are caused and created by something. Mm. And that when we understand that, we can change that. And we are in control of changing our future behavior. Mm-hmm. That's the decoding and reprogramming part of what we're talking about. So we're not trying to place blame. We're trying to understand what is creating the patterns and programs,
yeah,
and then changing that. And it's, you are who you are, but when you recognize why you are,
that is the point.
You can change the path that you take next.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's not as much, that's it. It's not as much understanding the who you are, but understanding the why you are.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
five whys.
Yeah. Root cause analysis.
Root cause analysis in quality management systems or in...
any ISO standard.
ISO standard in, what is that called? Quality management, the other stuff like Six Sigma stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When there's a situation, when there's an abnormality, when there's a... what is
it? Has an issue finding or nonconformity.
Nonconformity, that's what
it's
I was looking for.
It's important to do a good root cause analysis because you don't want the problem happen again.
And part of that is the five why. Why, mm-hmm, why? So finding out the why, the root cause, helps you make the change.
Yeah. And evaluate if the change is effective because if you made a change, you're testing. If you have, again, the issue, go back and do, again, the root cause because maybe that is not the right one.
So what we want to look at here is self-honest, objective observation with compassion. Be compassionate about yourself. Don't be hard on yourself. We invite you to be self-honest, objective, using objective observation, with compassion for the other person and compassion for yourself as well. So you want to be compassionate about both of yourselves. When we are not compassionate with ourselves, seeking to understand and discover the causes of our actions, we cannot be compassionate with others. So you need to understand that there's a why to why you're like you are and to be compassionate about that. Therefore, when you're listening to your partner and why they are the way they are, you can also be compassionate about that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're harsh on yourself, that puts you in the position of being harsh on them too. You know, we need to be strong, we need to be this way, oh, you need to be this way, rather than, oh, this is the way, this is why I am the way I am, this is what I want to change about it, let me find out why you are the way you are, and maybe I can help you as well. Do you want help?
And also it's an open negotiation because, again, so in the moment that you open your bags and he opened his bag, both is transparent. That is who we are. And then you want to agree this part of me and you want to can live with me with that. And this is the agreement and the commitment.
So do we want to approach this from a standpoint of love?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And going to our third point on this slide, love enables us to remove our criticisms of each other and helps us focus on the solutions that retain the relationship. If the goal is, I really want to retain the relationship, I love this person, I want to focus on the love, the connection, you focus on what's necessary to retain the relationship. If you just want to fix everything, and
you want to be right.
Right. Or you want to just destroy everything in order to find out who is at fault for whatever.
There you go.
You can destroy everything,
mm-hmm,
and then there's nothing to rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You have no more raw material left to rebuild.
Yeah. Yeah. So be careful for the objective when you try to open the box.
Finally here on 90 Day Soulmate, with Lizette and Jim, there's a conclusion here. The conclusion is this. There is a time to reflect on your answers and decide if you want to make any changes in the list you created for finding your soulmate. As time goes by and we learn through listening to ourselves, feel free to change your list. We are actively involved in creation. Take the driver's seat. What that all means is when you do self-analysis, when you find out about your parents, what you find out about your programs and patterns, and you go, what works and what doesn't work and what do I want, this should become part of your list. If you don't have a partner right now, you should create the list knowing what you want them to match so you do feel at home in that homeostasis of love.
Yeah.
Have a great week. Thank you for listening to 90 Day Soulmate.
See you next week.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.